Well, I think we've got a perfect morning and have chosen a perfect spot to begin this podcast this morning. My name's Jamie Lund. I'm the National Trust's archaeologist in the north, and I've worked for the National Trust for 25 years. And we're suspended over the River Kent, which is looking quite full of water this morning. And you can probably hear the lovely riffles in the river downstream. And the reason we're here this morning is to share with you my excitement and what I know about an industry that was hugely important here in South Lakeland, the manufacture of black powder. I won't say gunpowder because that would be incorrect. It's black powder that they're making here in this area, which is used for quarrying and for mining and for blasting. They're not making munitions grade powder. But this is a wonderful place to tell you a little bit about the story of black powder manufacture, because we're really in the heart of the manufacturing heartlands. We had seven gunpowder works here in South Lakeland, four just in this area here, a couple at the foot of Windermere, and then one all the way up in Elterwater at the entrance to Great Langdale. The reason that South Lakeland became such a hub of black powder manufacture was really, I think, threefold, maybe even fourfold. Firstly, it had lots of raw materials. It had easy access to coppice wood, and charcoal was by far and away the most single ingredient of which you needed the greatest supply. Machinery and the apparatus of gunpowder manufacture was powered first by water wheels and then by water turbines. And as you can hear this morning, we've never had a shortage of water to power that sort of equipment. Thirdly, you've got lots of space here in South Cumbria where you can safely manufacture a dangerous product, safe in the knowledge that you're not going to have too many people wandering through. And finally, the industrial past of the Lake District has only recently disappeared from view. We still do have a number of functioning quarries in the Lake District, but they're quite small in scale, quite few in number. But if you'd been here 150, 100 years ago, you would have seen and heard a really different picture. Many of the Lakeland valleys contained industrial sites, slate quarries, mineral mines, mineral processing mills, gunpowder works. Particularly the woodlands would have rung with the sound of manufacture. We're probably hovering, I would say, about 5 metres above the River Kent, and I'm looking south at a pretty nondescript piece of grass just alongside the riverbank. But that is an area that has quite high heritage significance, because it is the site of the first and earliest gunpowder manufacturing works in the north of England. We're looking at the site of Old Sedgwick Gunpowder Works that first received its licence and started manufacturing as early as 1764. I think it's a really attractive bridge. It's got two limestone pillars, one on either side of the riverbank. They're quite monumental, and they've got these wonderful, elegant, round-headed archways. But the principal reason for building this bridge is safety, and it's to exclude people from the site. We've obviously got a dangerous process that occasionally resulted in accidents and the loss of life. So it was really important for the people establishing this site to make sure they could exclude people from the site and give them safe access through the site. And the way that they did that was by diverting the public footpath from the western side of the River Kent, where the works were going to be established, onto the eastern side. It's a wonderful spot to start our tour. So on that note, we'll go and have a look at some of the buildings and some of the processes. Great, well, we've just walk through what would have been the entrance to New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works. I imagine I would have walked straight through some sort of wooden barrier there with a stop sign to bring a halt to all pedestrians and vehicles. and I've got two buildings either side of me. This small little timber, pretty nondescript looking timber building, really does look like a glorified garden shed, is hugely significant. It is the clocking on house and place where people arriving to start their day's work would have emptied their pockets and taken out their coins and their keys and their penknife, any other metal objects, along with any smoking materials, and popped it in their pigeonhole until the end of the day, because from this point on you are in a place where explosions happen and you are surrounded by dangerous energy. People clock in, clock out, so there's a very clear record of who's on site. On my opposite side of the road, you've got what is still a really impressive stone-built two-storey building. And this building had a number of uses. Today, it's in domestic use. When the site was working in the second half of the 19th century, we would have been standing here on a weighbridge. Any carts loaded with gunpowder cartridges or gunpowder in barrels would have been parked on here, and it would have allowed a really clear and accurate record to be made of the weight of the product that is leaving site and has been sold. That's obviously to help try and keep accurate accounts, but critically, there was great importance placed upon the control of gunpowder. You didn't want a black market of gunpowder. You didn't want the powder falling into unskilled hands and accidents happen. So very stringent records and control were kept of the sale and transportation of this material, and weighing it and making sure that the amount actually leaving site accords with the amount that you've sold in your record books is one really effective way of helping to keep control. So we've got some wonderful elegant windows with their narrow white painted glazing bars. This building from right to left would have had a little search watch house, that little end window, which is just slightly smaller than all the others. There would have been somebody there keeping an eye on the barrier and monitoring all traffic in and out of the site, going out, finding out why people are arriving, taking charge of deliveries and things like that. Then the middle two windows would have provided light and air for the main offices, where the records of sales and deliveries are being kept. And then to the left, that final window was the window that looked out onto the weighbridge, so people could shout through what the weight was, a record could be made, the barrier lifted, and the material would leave or enter the site. To the rear of the building is the foreman's house, and just in the same way today that manufacturing sites often have a foreman living on site to make sure that there's always somebody in charge at all times of day and night, should something happen on the site, the foreman was occupied the house to the rear of the offices and the watch house and the weighbridge office, and could manage the site from the comfort of his own home. Okay, so we've stepped off the path a short distance and walked into an area that's quite overgrown. The rose bay willow herb that's just flowering is a little bit taller than me today, and it's quite hard to see the detail of what's underfoot. But the reason we're here is because just by scraping away at the soil, you begin to realise that there is a hard standing across this whole area, and we're standing in what was the largest building on site here at New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works. This large building was 2.5 stories tall, and it fulfilled a number of functions. Gunpowder is made through incorporating together three materials: saltpeter, sulfur, and charcoal. The saltpeter makes up about 70% of the ingredients, with sulfur and charcoal providing roughly about 15% each of the eventual finished product. In this building where we're stood now, this functioned as the saltpeter refinery, because the saltpeter which was transported all the way from Chile, arrived in an unwashed, dirty, raw mineral form. And in order to prepare it for use, it had to be soaked and boiled and washed in large cast iron vats, which were boiled to boil out and remove all of the impurities, and the saltpeter crystals were then scooped out and dried and could be used in the process. And as I say, they came all the way from Chile. The sulfur, we believe, came from Sicily and southern Italy, and it was only the charcoal that was manufactured locally. The descriptions of this building in use are really quite fascinating, because it paints the picture of large cast iron cauldrons simmering away these batches of saltpeter crystals, with the steam from the cauldrons rising and escaping through these large two tiers of open louvre vented windows to try and get rid not only of the steam and the moisture, but also the smell, because I imagine it would have been a really overwhelming, toxic environment with these saltpeter crystals boiling away and releasing all manner of gases as they reach their temperature and begin to release their impurities. So I imagine getting a draft through this building and a flow of air would have been absolutely critical. Once these crystals were washed, they were dried and then taken over to the preparing house, where that critical percentage mix of 70% saltpeter, 15% sulfur and 15% charcoal were incorporated together. They were mixed in the right sort of ratios to begin the process of further refining. One of the things that I love most of all about coming to New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works is that opportunity for discovery. And you only have to step a couple of metres off the path to find something unexpected and feel that thrill of seeing something that nobody else knows is here. There's a couple of things here that's worth looking at. First of all, this is our first view of the impressive leat, which runs right through the heart of the processing plant. A leat is effectively a constructed channel for water to flow, from which it can flow over various wheels and be brought into buildings to power turbines and water wheels and produce power for all sorts of processes that are taking place here across the site. It's looking absolutely gorgeous today. We've left the path and walked through head-height nettles and knee-height dog mercury, and looking down now into the leat to see all sorts of ferns and fruiting brambles really underline that sense of discovery and something being disappearing from view and being hidden by nature, waiting to be rediscovered. And I think that sense of rediscovery is really strong here as we turn around and look into a roofless building. It's absolutely full of tall nettles that are just capturing the sun and are that wonderful pale green luminescent colour. And this little building plays an interesting role in the storage of black powder across the site. We've just come from the saltpeter refinery, where the saltpeter crystals were heated and washed and then dried. From there, that material would have gone off to the preparing house, where it would have been mixed in the right ratios and proportions with sulfur and charcoal to bring those three ingredients together for the first time. Once they're together, that is called the green charge. Green as in it's not quite ready, it's not quite mature. We've walked a short distance out of the vegetation back onto the path and are now standing looking at the most monumental of the remaining buildings on site here at New Sedgwick. We're looking at the range of incorporating mills that are located at the heart of the site today. Just to my right is the tallest piece of standing masonry on site today. It's a huge, impressive arch. you could almost believe it's some sort of Roman era triumphal arch. It's so monumental, and it looks absolutely wonderful today, cloaked in green ivy that's reflecting the sun. And the central blast bank separates two ranges of incorporating mills. The ones just in front of me were the earliest, and is a range of six trapezoidal shaped mills, and there are another three on the other side of that large monumental blast wall. And just walking into one of the mills, it's trapezoidal in shape and has three solid stone walls. These buildings are called incorporating mills because those three ingredients, the saltpeter, the sulphur and the charcoal, having been mixed already in the preparing house and then stored in the green charge house, they are now going through a process that's known as incorporation. Because for black powder manufacture, it's not sufficient simply to bring those three materials together in their correct ratio. You've got to grind them and apply huge amounts of pressure to incorporate them together, to crush them together at a granular level and increase their relative density and gravity. And by doing so, by pushing the grains together and compressing them and compacting them as tightly as you can, you're effectively increasing their potential to release an explosive burst of energy when ignited. That incorporating took place in some large cast iron bowls, and there is a fragment of one just over here. There's about a quarter of a piece of one here, and you can see the wonderful rust marks on the cast iron. It's probably about 2 inches thick, about a metre across, and if I tap on that with a stone, you can hear that distinctive ring of the cast iron. So we've walked a short distance up from the collection of impressive incorporating mills. New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works, or the site of, is now a caravan and camping site, and has been since the late 1970s. Looking at these two former buildings today, the buildings themselves are gone, but the large stone structures that divided the two timber buildings and provided separation in the form of sturdy stone blast walls is still very much in evidence. What we're looking at the moment is the site of the powder press house and the cartridge press house. The gunpowder left Sedgwick in one of two forms. Firstly, as a pourable dry powder in barrels, or as wrapped cartridges, which were wrapped in wax paper and ready for the application of a fuse, to be dropped into a shot hole in a mine or a quarry, tamped down with a bar of brass or copper to ensure there are no sparks, and then set off as a controlled charge. What we could imagine here is that the powder and the cartridges were put into what I would say is hydraulic presses, the sort of about the size of a large cheese press, so quite human in scale and size, and the powder was formed into something called press cakes by pouring it into a brass mould and then bringing the top press down, and in the early days of the site using a rotary wheel to press it and compact it by hand, and then in the later years of the site that was done automatically by hydraulic pressure, and that gave you something called a press cake. Now, very peculiarly and counterintuitively, that press cake was taken to another part of the site called the Corning House, where it was put through metal rollers with sharp teeth, a little bit like the musical wheels on music boxes, and that ground up that press cake back into a powder that could be poured. It feels like a really odd process to compact something and then to grind it up and break it apart, but the act of compressing and placing under hydraulic pressure, what it succeeded in doing is giving that powder that additional gravity and density that gave it that enhanced explosive charge. So it's an odd thing to do, but a really important part of the process. We're standing on the edge of the River Kent. You probably hear the riffles making that wonderful sound. This is a beautiful part of the site, and there's a yellow sign saying danger, deep water, just making sure that campers don't wander into the River Kent. That's flowing with a fair degree of force today without being made aware of just how forceful the water can be. But over 100 years ago, there was a different sort of danger that presented itself at this spot, because we're standing in what little remains of the glaze house here at New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works. And I look around, and all we really have is an L shape of standing stonework, part of a floor. And if I turn around, I can see an earthen blast bank, probably about 3 metres high, looming over me today, supporting some beech trees and saplings and covered in dog mercury, and is all part of this undulating forest floor that we have here at New Sedgwick. And the function of the glaze house was to coat those individual grains of gunpowder in graphite. Graphite being locally available in the Lake District. We're very unusual to have a graphite mine in Seathwaite in Borrowdale, and I imagine that some of the graphite might have come from that site to be used here. And the graphite was milled into a fine powder and then mixed in with the gunpowder to coat the grains on an individual granular level. And the effect of being rolled in graphite was to enable the powder to be poured in a very smooth, continuous action, which was considered to make handling on site and its eventual use a little bit safer. But clearly something's happened here that has removed almost all traces of the glaze house. And the reason for that is that the first glaze house, we'll be looking at its replacement shortly, the site of the first glaze house was almost completely destroyed by an accident in 1903. And I've got the description of the accident here on a piece of paper. It took place on the 30th of March and resulted in the loss of the glaze and the corning houses. The accident appears to have been caused by the simple action of somebody tightening a key on a reel shaft. And what that suggests to me is somebody is adjusting one of the leather bands that is being used to provide rotary motion and power inside this building from one of the line shafts. Something has happened during that adjustment and it has caused an explosion. It says that the glaze and the corning houses were completely destroyed and that the blast was so large that bits of flying and burning debris caused damage to adjacent buildings, including the stove house and the cartridge compressing house, causing £4,000 worth of damage. Most alarmingly, two people were killed and four men were injured. And the newspaper reports from the Westmorland Gazette at the time talk about a dreadful scene that was faced by the fire brigade and the local rescue team and local people who came to help, with the bodies of the people within the glaze house being blown into the air and being coming to rest on the opposite shore of the River Kent, which I imagine today I would say it's about 30 metres away. So it was a really grisly and bloody scene that those rescuers and the fire brigade would have witnessed on that day, on the 30th of March 1903, and really brings home just how very dangerous it was to work in gunpowder manufacture on this site. So I think you can hear from the fact that my voice is raised and I'm struggling to be heard over the sound of the water, is that once again we're alongside the River Kent. This time we're at the extreme northern edge of New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works, and the reason we're here is that we're standing on a timber bridge that spans the mouth of the Leet. So it's at this point here that's a weir structure, part of which you can still see in the bed of the river today, would have, when it was needed, diverted a certain amount of water along this channel, which is about 3 metres wide, passes underneath my feet, and I'm turning around to see it disappearing off on a curving serpentine course back along the route we've just walked, back towards the drying house, the glaze house and the incorporating mills, and we'll only re-enter the river at a point where we started our walk by the office and the clocking in sheds. So the Leet, I would say, is just over a kilometre in length and runs through the whole of the site. There's various points where the tramway actually spanned it, and you can see iron posts set into the ground in the Leet and little shoes which would have carried the iron rails over the top to allow the trams to criss and cross the site. Turning again to look at the River Kent, I look down and I can see the remains of what looks like a trash screen. So a series of metal bars that would have sat across the entrance to the Leet to stop bits of timber and floating debris entering the Leet and possibly disrupting the flow of water across the site. And just below me is a set of teeth, cast iron teeth, that would have been part of a sluice mechanism that could have been lifted to control the amount of water that was entering the Leet at any one time. So this really is the source of the power for all of the operations across New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works, which to begin with would have been largely simple water wheels, but then would have been moved over to water-powered turbines. We know that the turbines here were made by Gilkes's, and Gilkes's of Kendal is still manufacturing turbines today, and they are in much demand across the world, and particularly in the Lake District, for use in high head water turbine schemes, hydroelectric schemes, and are powering buildings and putting electricity into the grid today using much the same technology that we were harnessing on site 100 years ago. Well, we've walked back into the heart of the site, and I can see five or six caravans and camper vans just a few metres away from me, but we've stepped off into the undergrowth, walking through the slightly dishevelled and scorched looking dog mercury, to find a point where we're looking down an avenue of beech trees. But it's not quite a simple avenue, because at the far end there is a branch or a second line to the avenue to make a simple cross or cruciform shape. And this cross shape, which includes about 50 or 60 or so beech trees, was planted as a war memorial. For a long time, we assumed that it had been planted in memory of the fallen in the First World War. But it was when we were doing some research to try and understand this site and its origins and its development that we realised that this monument of trees, this living memorial, was actually planted and beginning to take on its mature character before the First World War. And so, looking at the maps and global events, we suspect that it was planted in memory of the fallen of the Second Boer War around the turn of the century. It had a, like so many things on this site, it had a dual use. It clearly was a memorial, but it also had a functional use in that at the far end, and we're looking down an avenue probably at its other end about 100 metres away, we would have seen a small cast iron mortar or cannon that was nicknamed the Dog locally by the people who worked on site. And the dog was used in a series of test firings to test the quality and the explosive power of the black powder that was being manufactured here. And the sound and the shockwave would be fired down the central avenue, the long axis of the cross-planting of trees towards where we're standing now. Looking at the historic maps, it's clear that when these trees were first planted, and probably for the first 60, 70 years of their life, they were the only tall, semi-mature or mature trees across the site. And so this cruciform plantation of trees would have had a great visual presence across the site. Today, they are just 60 trees amongst many, many more. And obviously, as the site has been fallen out of use as a manufacturing site, and more latterly since the 1970s found use as this quiet oasis, so many more trees have become established across the site, so now they really are beginning to form part of a woodland. It really does offer a wonderful contrast to the origins and the purpose of this site, as it's been for most of its time in the last 150 years. And also, I think it's a wonderful indicator of change and how places, their character, their visual appeal, their aesthetics, and of course their meaning can change over time as well. I think spending a couple of hours here at New Sedgwick, following the trails, following the route that we've done today and visiting so many of the buildings makes a fascinating escape into an industrial past that is largely hidden, isn't well known, and gives that sense for real discovery in amongst the brambles and the undergrowth. And I hope this podcast has been useful in whetting your appetite, piquing your interest, and perhaps encouraging you to come and take a look for yourself and investigate the site. The other thing you might want to do is to take a look at the wonderful English Heritage Survey report that's simply called New Sedgwick Gunpowder Works, that is available as a free download. So downloading that to your phone or taking a look at it, some of the wonderful figures and information contained inside, be really useful, perhaps making your site visit. But if you do visit, I hope you have a good day. I hope you're blessed with the weather as we are today. And thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.